and ask questions and whatnot.
All right. We are going to do part two. I'm actually going to back up a couple steps so we get a full picture of what's going on. Let's make sure we go back through our timeline a little bit. What did we start our timeline with? What event?
Presentation.
What was the event, scriptural event, though?
Yes,
Jesus goes back to Bethany.
Even before that, what's he do first?
He goes and gets some
McDonald's. Wasn't even here.
Mrs. Hogg knows it. What else? Before all that. It's a good event. It's happy.
Palm Sunday,
right? Triumphal entry. Hosanna in the highest, right? Everybody's worshiping him when he comes to the city. Who's talking? Now, that is Sunday. Okay, then we talked about how he went in on Monday. Now, where did he go back to stay every night?
With Lazarus,
Mary and Martha in Bethany. Always going back there to stay at night. We have several different times where he goes in and teaches in the temple. He cleanses the temple, right? Yes, Tito.
Why didn't the people riot when he was crucified? Since going back to that question.
We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get to crucifixion tonight, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And because we know, we established on Palm Sunday, he's a pretty popular guy. Everybody loves him. By the time we get to Thursday, Friday, he's not so popular anymore. Goes from being like top rock star guy to being somebody people don't like at all. Okay, so back and forth, we get the Passover, we get Judas meeting with before the Passover, Caiaphas and the other authorities to betray Jesus. During the Last Supper, he washes all their feet. Judas slips out to go betray. He predicts Peter's denial. Then they go where to pray? Garden of Gethsemane. Let me remember where the Garden of Gethsemane was located. It is outside the city. What's it close to?
Mount of Olives.
It's lower down on the Mount of Olives. Okay? And we'll see the map. I've got the same map that'll come up. We'll have different spots on it. But the map is to the east of the city. Sorry, on that side of the city. And so we're in Gethsemane. Judas brings the soldiers. We talked about this last week. Why does Judas have to do the sign of the kiss? Why does he kiss Jesus? Remember, we talked about how some of the soldiers were borrowed Roman soldiers, they would not have known who Jesus was. Yeah, they were just Jews to them. Okay, so to identify him. Yes, Mr. Brewer. Yeah, he probably could have done that.
There's a symbolism there.
Yes. And so, yeah, and then you get the great response of, "Do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?" So, at this point, Jesus gets arrested, and we're going to talk about all his trials. Now, what interesting thing happens with Peter before they take him out of the garden? Interesting part of the story. There you go, Evan. What's he do?
Chops off the soldier's ear.
Yeah, Peter gets a little bit zealous with his sword, and he chops off his. And bonus points to know the soldier's name. Whose ear? Who loses the ear? Does anybody know before I go to Mrs. Hall? Nope. You got the right ending on it, Preston.
Is it Caiaphas?
Nope. He's the high priest. All right, let's talk about
it. Malchus?
It's Malchus. Malchus is the soldier that loses his ear. Jesus heals it almost instantly. Okay? It's a pretty cool scene. They take him off. All right, now, we kind of did a few of these slides last time, but see if you remember. How many trials are we going to talk about with Jesus?
Six.
Now, we normally think three, and I'm going to show you why it's six. So I know we talked about the first trial last time, but just go back and review, make sure you know what's going on. You got another question, Jake?
Oh, yeah, I have a question.
Okay, or a comment?
Yes.
Go for it.
Okay, question. If Jesus put the ear back on the dude that got cut off, isn't that evidence enough that something got?
You would think so. I think Malchus probably believes right at that moment, wouldn't you think? But you would think all these miracles that he's done have been evidence that he's Son of God, yet they still don't believe. So, yeah. I wonder how many of these Roman soldiers come to faith, because a lot of them tend to move that direction when they see this stuff. All right, so six trials. Jesus is taken to the house of Annas. We talked about this last week. Okay, now who was Annas? Exactly. So Annas is Caiaphas's father-in-law. Annas is Caiaphas' father-in-law. He was the high priest. We talked about this last week. How long did you get to be high priest?
Until
you died. Okay, so as far as the Jews are concerned, Annas is still technically a high priest. Now, the Romans have moved Annas along, kind of early retirement, and they placed Caiaphas in charge. It's still in the family. But Caiaphas, as far as the Romans are concerned, is the high priest. But as far as the Jews are concerned, they're still going to recognize Annas. So it's brought, Jesus is brought to Annas in John chapter 18. Okay? And he's questioned by Annas. Now, we talked about this. What time of day is it?
Night.
Yeah, and maybe either late night or early morning. Probably more early morning. Probably 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay? And we talked about why this is kind of out of the ordinary. Because people aren't awake at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. They're not holding meetings at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. So the Sanhedrin's not waiting on him. They arrest him, and they bring him to Annas' house while they go and gather the Sanhedrin to get up out of bed to come meet in the middle of the night, which they never do. Okay, so Annas questions Christ and kind of buys some time for the Sanhedrin to get together. Okay, there is... Well, go back. There, no, I'm right. There. The Gethsemane is up there on the right, down at the bottom of the Mount of Olives. The star in the middle of the city is probably where Annas' house is. So I'm just trying to give you an idea of the path that Jesus is going to travel this night for all these trials. So he goes from... Excuse me. By the way, I can't walk all the way over there. But if you... because I'll die. not literally. But if you go to that star with the house of Annas, if you go down a little bit from there, just go about directly south, that's probably where the Last Supper was. So when he had the Last Supper, he probably goes out of the city walls. We don't really know which gate he leaves from. Doesn't really matter. Goes up to the Mount of Olives, Garden of Gethsemane, and prays. He gets arrested. He's brought back into the city, and he's taken to Annas' house there, right in the middle of that city complex right there, until the Sanhedrin can get brought together. Sanhedrin is gathered. John 18:24 says, "Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas the high priest." So first trial, Annas, his house. It's just Annas and the guards. That's the only people that are there. Okay? But it is sort of a trial. He is questioned, and he doesn't really answer anything. Okay, if you look at John 18, so we've got a little more time tonight. I'll make sure we get a good picture here. John 18 says... Well, actually, that's not the one where we've got more. There's another one where we get some a little more interaction. All right, sorry. I went jumping the wrong spot. But now he's going to his second of six trials. The second trial is going to be in front of Caiaphas, the high priest. That is down the road from Annas' house. We just move a little bit farther into the city, and we're going to be taken to Caiaphas' house. Not the Sanhedrin just yet, but Caiaphas' house. Okay, and the Sanhedrin, there's preliminary gatherings of the Sanhedrin there. Okay, if we look at Mark chapter 14, we're going to stay pretty much in the Gospels here, so you shouldn't get lost. I think we all know Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, right? So Mark 14:53 says, "And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. And Peter followed him afar off." So Peter's on the scene, far away. He's following, but he's not close enough to kind of associate with it. He's just kind of trailing as we go through. "Even into the palace of the high priest," so Caiaphas' palace, "and he sat with the servants and warmed himself with a fire, and the chief priests and all the council sought for witness against Jesus to put him to death and found none." So we bring in all these witnesses. And remember, this is the middle of the night trial, the one that they're not allowed to have, the one that's against Jewish custom. One that's really out of the norm. So they're bringing in witnesses. "Many bear false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together." Okay, so we talked a little bit about this last week, right? We got witnesses, but their stories don't match up. Okay, so imagine you got two witnesses and they tell different stories. Yeah, James.
You said that it was against Jewish customs or Jewish law?
Well, it's just totally out of the ordinary. It's you can't have secret trials. You know how, like, for our country, you have to have a you have to be read your rights, you have to have a trial before your peers, and that kind of similar sort of idea. This secret trial in the middle of the night would not have passed a lawful kind of thing. As far as Jewish law is concerned, it would technically be illegal. Yeah, because you got to make it public. Yeah.
Wouldn't they, the people that got those witnesses, wouldn't they be smart enough to rehearse the stories all?
You would think so.
You know, get some information and be like, oh, this doesn't match up.
But apparently it doesn't match up. Okay. Look what it keeps going. And there arose certain and bear false witness against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. Now, did Jesus say that?
Yeah,
he did say that. Now, was he talking about tearing down the temple?
No.
Not literally. He was talking about his body, is what we'll hear later on. Okay. Neither so did their witness agree. So that sounds like, all right, we got him. He said he's going to tear down the temple. We can get him with this. Even that doesn't work. So they've tried false witnesses. They've tried a witness to repeat what he said. That doesn't convict him. So they don't have any proof on him yet. And the high priest stood up in the midst. And this is a desperation move. Okay. The high priest is really upset. Because the witnesses have just ruined what he thought was going to be a great trial. You know, we're going to get him. These witnesses will testify. We'll have witnesses. Because what do you have to convict somebody of a crime? I need witnesses. And the witnesses have totally failed. So here's a desperation move from Caiaphas. Look what he says. He stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses against thee? But he held his peace. And so he's getting more and more upset. Why is he talking? Again, the high priest asked him and said unto him, and here it is. Art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? What's he asking him? Are you the Son of God? Are you the Messiah? Are you the promised one of the Old Testament? Are you the Redeemer? Are you that guy? Are you this truly the Son of God that the Old Testament speaks of? And Jesus said, I am. Now, what's that going to do to the high priest? He just said, I am. Yeah, that's me. Hey, remember he said at another time before Abraham was, I am. Same idea. I am. I'm God. I'm the Messiah. And if that weren't enough, you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Yes, I am the Son of God, and you're going to see me returning one day on the clouds. You know, I am the Messiah that everybody in the Old Testament talks about. Then the high priest rent his clothes and said, what need we any further witnesses? You have heard of the blasphemy. What think you? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face and to buffet him and to say unto him, prophesy. And the servants did strike him with the palms of their hands. So when he announces that he answers the question, that he is the Messiah, that's when the condemnation of death comes down. Now, who is condemning him to death right now?
Sanhedrin, Annas.
Okay, Jewish authorities, right? Annas and Caiaphas, high priest, Sanhedrin. Now, I think we mentioned this last week, but if the Jewish authorities were going to put somebody to death, how would they execute them?
Stoning.
Now, what had Christ been prophesying to his disciples about how he was going to die? Yeah, how many times did he say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Okay, so if they stone him, is that being lifted up?
No.
Okay, second thing that goes along with that is, why don't the Jews just kill him right now?
They can't.
It's not legal. Because they are answerable to who?
Rome.
So they know they can't execute a death sentence. Okay, and if they were to execute it, it would be by stoning. Right? And so that doesn't really link up with what our scriptures say. All right, let's remember that. Meanwhile, outside, let's flip over to Luke 22. And this is going on outside. Because they've just beat him. They've just condemned him. They spit on him. They beat him up. And now they're going to be moving him. And look what happens in Luke 22. I know this is a familiar story, but I think this is the most in-depth one we have. Then took they him, the Sanhedrin took Jesus, and led him and brought him into the high priest's house, and Peter followed afar off. Remember, we heard that in the last verses. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall and were set down together, Peter sat down among them. We've heard that already. But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire, and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, woman, I know him not. Denial number one. He's sitting by the fire while Jesus is inside. 58. And after a little while, another saw him and said, thou art also of them. And Peter said, man, I am not. Denial number two. While he's sitting in the courtyard when Jesus is inside the house. And then look at this. In about the space of 1 hour after. So it's not like bang, bang, bang. These are spread out accusations. You're him. No, it's not me. few minutes later, another one comes up. I saw you with him. No, that's not me. An hour passes as he's waiting outside. So, you know, some of the movies show you and he gets hit three times in a row.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be like that's what's happening. An hour passes. Another confidently affirms, saying, of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, man, I know not what you say. And immediately while he yet spake the crew. And then look at this. As he says that, nice Nintendo going on, but okay. Anybody got a silence button? Put it in your binder, Ken. It'll fit right in there. And so as he is denying him, as the rooster is crowing, okay, look what happens in verse 61. They're leading Jesus out at that moment. What, talk about perfect timing, right? They're leading Jesus out, and Jesus hears him say, I don't know him. And look at verse 61. The Lord turned and looked upon Peter. How many of you have seen Passion of the Christ? I think it's one of the most powerful scenes in the movie. Peter looks up, and they actually lock eyes. They make eye contact. And Jesus just looks at him, and Peter just, I mean, it just crushes him. I mean, you can imagine that moment for Peter. I'll never deny you. I'll never deny you. Yeah, three times. Yeah, whatever, Lord, that'll never happen. On the third time, he looks him in the eye as soon as it happens. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord and how he had said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. And they portray that in the movie. He runs into John and Mary on the way out, and he can't even talk to them. He's running out, and he's weeping, and he's crying. Okay, so not a great moment for Peter. The good news is, next time we see Peter, he's going to be bouncing back pretty well. So, all right, third trial. Now, why do we need a third trial? Well, because the second trial didn't really happen. You know what I'm saying? The third trial didn't happen. The second trial didn't really happen because it was illegal. So it happened, but as far as the record goes, there was no trial. So what do? They've held Jesus all night, and when the sun comes up, as soon as the sun comes up, hey, the Sanhedrin's here, we just happen to have a trial. Let's go ahead and have an official one. And so the official condemnation comes at this trial at dawn. Yes, Jake.
Does the high priest have lots of power?
Yes.
So if so, is there some kind of prophecy against it? So why isn't Ananias, Sapphira, and Beelzebub just to condemn him?
Why can't? Well, he is going to. He just has. It has to be a convened time for the Sanhedrin.
Isn't it kind of like the prime minister, the queen?
Yeah, and it's sort of like, you know how when, if you've ever heard the term in government, like Congress is in session and it's out of session?
Yeah.
If Congress is out of session, a senator can't just go up and like pass a law because it's not in session. Sanhedrin wasn't in session. And so did he condemn him? Yes, he condemned him before, but he's going to condemn him again now in front of everybody. All the Jewish people in Jerusalem are going to see this now, and now it's official. Does that make sense? It's a public proclamation of what happened. So Matthew 27:1 says, when the morning was come, the next morning, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Okay, why did they do that? Because the other one didn't happen. The other one's illegal. It happened in the middle of the night, and they won't recognize it. While all this is going on, Judas kills himself. Okay, Matthew 27:5, Judas goes out to the potter's field, and he hangs himself. Now, depending on what the account you read, there will be a hanging, and there will also be one where he falls down and his bowels come out. It's a great, happy family moment. I think he was hanging when they cut him down. He hit the rocks, and that's what happened. They both happened, but the hanging is what killed him. Okay, so Judas hangs himself in that field. We don't know exactly where it is, but it may be somewhere down here on the southern side of the city in the Hidden Valley. That's everybody's best guess on where that potter's field might be. Okay, so fourth trial. Now we've condemned him. If we're the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin condemns him. Now they have to go to Pilate. Who is Pilate? What's his title? Anybody know his title? Another bonus.
Prefect.
Yes, he is the prefect. Good job, Jamie. Prefect. Okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to be the prefect?
Under the king. Like he's the next one. He's
not
the chief of Samantha.
Yeah. Who's the head of Rome?
Nero.
Caesar, and Caesar is an emperor, right? Okay. So there's an emperor over all of Rome, but we know the Roman Empire is like massive, right? So the emperor can't rule everywhere. So he has prefects in certain areas that oversees that region. That's what Pilate is in Judea. Okay, that's the Roman name for the colony, Judea. And he oversees all that. He's kind of like a governor. Okay, he oversees what's going on. So they go to Pilate. Okay, now look at Luke 23. And let's read the first five verses. He says, "And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. All the scribes, all the Pharisees, all the priests. Take Jesus to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ a king. And Pilate asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews? And he answered and said, Thou sayest it, you said it. And then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man. And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning with Galilee to this place." Okay? So, what are they accusing Jesus of?
Blasphemy.
Insurrection?
They would say blasphemy. Now, is blasphemy a executable offense as far as the Romans are concerned?
No. No.
They don't care. Pilate could care less. Couldn't care less. Sorry, I hate when people say that. Couldn't care less that Jesus is blaspheming Yahweh. He doesn't care about that because Caesar's not a Jew. You know, that's what he's going to say to Jesus when he talks to him. Am I a Jew? I don't care what you're teaching. What did they just say he did?
Treason.
Okay, treason's part of... There's another word I'm looking for, though. Treason is very close. There's an S word that goes along with treason.
Claiming to be king above Caesar and...
I'm improving your vocabulary tonight, so hang with me. Okay, the word I'm looking for is sedition. Okay, sedition. It means... Sedition means I'm trying to tear down the government. I'm trying to tear down Caesar. So if I make myself king, then I am committing sedition because I'm trying to pull down the Roman government. All right. Now, it's very close to treason. So they charge him. They say he's saying he's king. He wants to tear down Caesar. Now, why are they doing that? Because that's a crime. That's what the Romans will execute him for. So they're trying to get this passed as a seditionist. Now, is Jesus a seditionist?
No. Well, no. They can try him as one, though, because he claimed that to be the king.
But is he trying to tear down Caesar?
No.
No. Okay, so notice what Pilate says. What did Pilate say in verse 4, was it? I find no fault in this man. He hasn't done anything. This is important to remember. I'm going to do a Sunday school lesson on this and spread this out a little bit more. But a lot of people think Jesus died as a seditionist. He didn't. He didn't die as a seditionist. Because all you have to do is read through what Pilate says. And all Pilate does every time Jesus comes up is, I find no fault in this man. This man is innocent. This man's done nothing wrong. And remember when he nails the sign up over Jesus' head, what does it say?
King
of the Jews. Do you remember what the Jews come and tell or ask Pilate to do to the sign? Yeah, say it says he said he was king of the Jews. And what does Pilate say? What is written? I have written it. No, I'm not writing that. So Pilate does not execute Jesus as a seditionist. He does it because he has nothing else to do. He can't. You'll see that in a second. He just has no other alternative. He's in a bad spot. Okay, as George Clooney would say in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's in a tight spot. Okay? He's in a tight spot. He doesn't have anywhere to go. Okay? It's funny. All right.
And then tights. That's pretty good.
There's a couple different places where Pilate may have been. One is Herod's palace down here in the south. The other one is the Antonia Fortress up there in the north part. Now, tradition is pretty strong for the one in the north, because if you go to Israel, I haven't been there, but if you go to Jerusalem, and you've heard of the Via Dolorosa, okay, if you've heard the song, right? No, I'm not going to sing it. But the traditional Via Dolorosa is up there up north. Now, if it happened down here, then the Via Dolorosa isn't really what they say it is. It doesn't really matter. But he was in one of those two spots. Okay, it's just a question of where would Pilate have stayed when he was in Jerusalem. Okay, now, look at verse 6 of what we just read, Luke 23:6. They said he's been doing this from Galilee. And as soon as Pilate hears Galilee, he goes, oh, all right, I got an out. Because look at verse 6. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod. Okay, so he says, all right, Galilee, that's Herod's, the tetrarch of Galilee. I'll send him to Herod Antipas. Okay, Herod Antipas is the same guy that cut John the Baptist's head off. It's that Herod.
That's nice.
Okay, not a real nice guy. Okay, and so he sends him to Herod. Okay, that's the fifth trial. He's going to go to Herod. Why is Pilate doing that? Because this will get it off my hands. Herod can deal with it. I can move on with my life. Okay? So he sends it to Herod. And what does Herod want from Jesus?
Miracle.
Yeah, show me a miracle. I've heard you're a miracle worker. Show me a miracle. And Christ doesn't even speak to Herod. Yeah. He doesn't even give him the time of day. That's and Herod's really disappointed. Like, all right, get him out of here. Herod's not really even a Jew, so it's not like, you know, Jesus doesn't even give him the time of day. So Herod says, nothing. Now, we don't know what Herod pronounced, but we know Herod didn't pronounce him guilty. And Herod kind of either gets tired of him or says, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Send him back to Pilate. So it's a very quick one. He doesn't condemn him. And again, Pilate's going to come out and go, I sent him to Herod, and Herod didn't find anything wrong with him either. Why are you bringing me this man? Why are you trying to get me to kill him? I don't want to kill him. Okay? Right, so he goes down to Herod, turns around, whoop, right back up to Pilate if we're at that northern thing or over here. Yeah.
Couldn't that be considered disrespectful? I know Jesus never said
that. Well, it's a question of this guy's not even a real king. He's, you know, they called him King Herod, but it was almost a mocking thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have any authority. So, you know, why does he need to speak to him? He doesn't mouth off to him. That might be disrespectful. He just stays silent.
He can't say anything to anybody.
So yeah. He stays silent. Yeah, cool.
So it's basically just somebody overpaid and overtitled?
He is. He's a puppet of the Roman government.
And they portrayed that well in the past.
Yes. Yeah, he's just kind of this frivolous sort of goofy guy. Yeah. Yeah, if you ever study the Herods and see how they got in power, it's unbelievable how they got in power. They're just terrible. The Herod the Great was he just knew who to grab on. He would lose and he'd go to the other side. He'd lose and then he'd go to the other side. He's just as fickle as you can get, and they just ended up in the right place a lot of times. It's not going to end well for the Herods though, so that's good news. All right, my clicker's not working. Give me the next slide. There we go. So we're back in front of Pilate. And now Pilate's thinking, all right, I got to do something. This is getting out of hand because the Jews are getting more and more angry. So what does he do? There's a custom. They free a prisoner once a year. So he brings out Barabbas, a robber and a murderer, and says, all right, he figures this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm going to let one of these guys go. Do you want me to let Jesus go, who's done obviously nothing wrong, or do you want me to let Barabbas go? And what does the crowd say? Barabbas. Let Barabbas go. It's okay now. Yeah. Let Barabbas go. And Pilate is like, what's going on with you people? And why in the world would you choose this murderer? But that's what he's forced to do. Yeah.
If Barabbas is as bad as people who study the Bible and stuff say he is, do you think he could have gone back to prison after
that? I would say it's probably pretty likely. They did a movie. I watched a movie one time. And it was called Barabbas, and it was totally made up. I mean, it's not. There's no tradition for it. But that Barabbas felt so sorry for what had happened that he actually got saved and became like a missionary. I don't know. It was kind of an entertaining movie, but there's no. No. It was real. Anthony Quinn was Barabbas back in the '60s. It's an old movie. But I thought it was an interesting thought. Anyway, all right. So Pilate says, "All right, I'm going to have him flogged. I'm going to have him beaten." And then I'll bring him back up, and they'll let him go. That'll be enough, right? I'll have him flogged, because the flogging is brutal.
Yeah.
The cat of nine tails, the whips with the bone and the pieces of metal and the pieces of rock that are wrapped up in the whip that would tear flesh. And the best description that we've heard is that his back probably looked a lot like hamburger meat when it was all done. And this is a brutal, brutal whip.
And didn't folks often die from
flogging? Oh, you could definitely bleed out because of how much skin it can tear away and vessels it can tear away. Yeah. So he figures, once we do that, they'll see him and they'll go, okay, that's enough. So he commissions to have Jesus flogged. And Pilate brings Jesus in one more time in John 18. Okay, let's go over there because that's an important passage. Yeah.
Look at the fact that they're flogging. The average Jew went after a 7-mile flogging, which is getting more, right? More?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's pretty severe. It's more than just a 40 lashes, yeah. All right. Now, look at John 18. If we start in 33, 1833, Pilate entered into the judgment hall again. So here's Jesus beaten, bloody, looking awful. Okay? And Pilate goes into him and he says, art thou the king? Are you the king of the Jews? Tell me right now, are you the king of the Jews? And 34, Jesus answered him, sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it to thee of me? Is this because you really want to know, or because you just heard it out there? Is this a sincere question, kind of what Jesus is asking him? And Pilate answered, and what I want to know about this conversation, because this is probably my favorite conversation in Scripture. I just think it's really interesting, because I want to know what Pilate's tone of voice was. I don't know what he's really asking him. You know, and we don't really know, because he says, am I a Jew? Is that an angry statement? Like, who cares? I'm not a Jew. I don't care who you are. Or is it, you know, am I a Jew? I don't know this. Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What have you done? Tell me, why did all these people want to kill you? And Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. And now is my kingdom not from hence. Voice is going, hold on. My kingdom's not here right now, because if they were, they'd fight for me. But that's not what's going on. Pilate therefore said unto him, art thou a king then? Are you a king? Tell me if you are a king. Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born. You ever want to know why Jesus came to this earth? He's telling us right now. To this end was I born. And for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Some of your other translations might be so, that I came to testify unto the truth. I came to testify that God had a plan of redemption. I came to testify that I am the Son of God. That's why I'm here. Hey, everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate says unto him, what is truth? And that's the tone. I want to know what Pilate's saying. Is it like a dismissive sort of, what is truth? No truth. Or is it, what is truth? Tell me what truth is. I want to know what truth is. I don't know. And when he had said this, he went out again unto the Jews and said unto them, I find in him no fault at all. Look, he's a bloody mess. We've beaten him to within an inch of his life. And I find no fault in him. But you have a custom that I should release, and that's the whole Barabbas idea. Okay? Jesus is mocked. He's beaten by the Roman soldiers, and he's presented to the multitude. He's put the crown of thorns is put on. The robe is put on. He's mocked. He's beaten. Okay? And they bring him out, and Pilate says, behold the man. Look at him. Look what we've done to him. Is this enough? And what do they say in John 19:6? Crucify. Yeah, Evan.
If he's, you know, Pilate's a Roman representative, and, you know, on behalf of the Romans, and they're pretty much in charge at the point, can't you just be like, well, I don't want to crucify him?
That's a good question. Let me address that a little bit. Here's what's going on, and here's my thought on this. I've looked at a lot of the history on here. Tiberius was the emperor of Rome. Okay? I know it's just a history moment, so bear with me, those of you guys, but I think this is important. Tiberius was the emperor of Rome. Tiberius doesn't really like being emperor. He gets bored with it. And he actually retires. He leaves Rome and goes and lives on an island. He leaves because he doesn't want to be emperor anymore. And he leaves a guy in charge, the captain of his guard, whose name is Sejanus. Okay, not that that's, you're going to remember that, but Sejanus is the captain of his guard. Now, when Tiberius is in charge, he's not real antagonistic towards Judea. Sejanus hates Jews. And so when Sejanus is in power, the abuse to the Jews is a lot heavier. You've heard of, you know, remember when Jesus talks about carrying the pack for somebody a mile? That's a Roman custom. A Roman could grab a Jew and say, here, carry my bag. You got to carry it for a mile. He could do that legally. That's what Jesus is talking about in that parable. So it was really tough on the Jews when Sejanus is in power. Well, Sejanus tries to become emperor himself. He does a little treason. They catch him. They execute him. And Tiberius comes back into power about 31 or 32 A.D. Okay? Just before this. Well, Tiberius finds out what Sejanus was doing, and he wants to be a lot nicer to the Jews for best summer. Yeah, he wants to make up for some, so nobody messes with the Jews anymore. So Pilate is dealing with riots going on in Jerusalem, and he knows he's already been in trouble a couple times. He's had some unrest, and he knows if it gets back word that he is going against the Jews and the Jews are rioting, he's done. He loses his job at the very least, or he dies at the very worst. So he's in a position where he's got to keep the Jews happy. He can't let them riot. And that's why he does it. I don't think Pilate's such a bad guy. I know movies portray Pilate as kind of like Satan incarnate. I think Pilate's a pretty good... Pilate, look at what we've read so far. Pilate tries to turn the earth upside down to get Jesus off. He's done nothing wrong. Is this good enough? Is this good enough? Is this good enough? Hey, and nothing works. Yeah, one.
Do you think that when they put the robe on him, do you think that actually might have sustained his death a little bit to help, like, clot bleed?
Could have, yeah. I guess that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think the pilot, like, eventually got saved?
There is a bit of a tradition for that. It's not a very strong tradition, but there are some people that say he got saved after this. His wife seems to be close to being a believer, because she says, this is a just man, don't do anything like this. So there's a possibility. I wonder, you know, maybe when we get to heaven, we'll see if Pilate's there, and then we'll know for sure. But look at John 19:12. And this is the trump card. You know, isn't this enough? Crucify him, crucify him. No, he hasn't done anything wrong. Crucify him, he hasn't done anything wrong. And then verse 12, and from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. He's trying to get him free. Hey, but the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whosoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. And so what are the Jews saying? If you let him go, we're going to Caesar. It's kind of like, I'm going to your daddy. Okay, if you don't do this now, I'm going to tell mom. That's kind of what we've got going on. Okay, just don't tell mom. Okay? And so he finally gives him over. He washes his hands and says, fine, we'll crucify him. But I don't like it. I don't want any part of it. Now, is there still a sin in him washing his hands and letting him go? Yeah, there is. But he tries and tries and tries. And he's in the last moment, he kind of gets a little cowardly and preserves himself rather than this innocent man. Yeah.
Do you think if Pilate let Jesus go and then got the heck out of there, do you think the Romans still would have hunted him down? Like, you just retired and disappeared?
Yeah, I don't know where he would have gone. It would, yeah, well, the Jews probably would have rioted on the spot, so they may have killed him. I don't know. Could have gotten bad. All right. I'm going to try to go through quick so we can get here. But in the meantime, preparations for crucifixion are made, and Jesus is mocked again in Matthew 27. As they set out for the place of crucifixion to the north of the walls of Jerusalem, Jesus is compelled to carry his cross. Now, it looks really good in the movies when they give him the big, long cross to carry. Not what he did. Okay? There's no way Jesus would have been able to carry the beam, both cross beams, all the way up. I mean, that would have been 200 and something pounds, and he was in pretty bad shape at that point. Now, the other thing you want to know about Jesus is he was in really good shape. Because if he wasn't, he wouldn't have survived the beating that he took. Okay. You know, we like to, we read these stories, you know, Jesus was a carpenter. Not really. Yes, but no. And the word that's used there for carpenter, and this may be pretty deep, but just stick with me. That didn't mean, when we think carpenter, we think a guy that, like, makes tables and shelves. Okay. Jesus was like an architect. He, like, built houses. I mean, it meant builder. It didn't just mean contractor. So, I mean, you know, when he makes these parables about people building houses on the rocks and on the sand, you know why that speaks? Because he knows what he's talking about. Because he can build houses. He's an architect. He's a general contractor. He's not putting together little tables. Okay? Could he do that? Sure. But he's a master builder. That's who he is. So, you know, you think about guys that carry around stone and wood and all that all day. You're going to be in good shape. He's a strong guy. So yeah, I mean, he's not ridiculous. He's not a bodybuilder. But he's, you know those guys that you don't have to be big to be strong. They're just kind of like that man strong, you know, that wiry strong, that's what Jesus would have been. So, you know, they make him kind of very frail in a lot of the paintings. I don't think he was frail at all. I think he was a pretty strong guy. Okay, so Simon the Cyrene comes up and helps him carry the cross. They go to one of these two places. That outside wall was not there during Christ's time, so the first star is still outside the city walls. That's kind of the traditional site on where he was crucified. When he arrives at Golgotha, he's offered a narcotic. He's offered a drug. You know, this will make sure you don't feel the pain as much. You know, take this, and he refuses it. Okay, two malefactors or two convicts are crucified with him, one on the right hand and one on the left. We get a confirmation of that as well, that he will be numbered with the transgressors. Fulfills prophecy. Okay, Jesus is crucified near the third hour. Now, what is the third hour? About what time is that? You anybody know? Because this is how they describe it in Scripture, the third hour, the sixth hour, the ninth hour. Okay, the hour started at about 6 a.m. So the third hour is 9 a.m. Okay? Third hour is 9 a.m. He's going to die at about the ninth hour, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay? And that seems like a really long time for a crucifixion. It's really not. But because he was in such bad shape, by the time he got there, he doesn't stay on the cross nearly as long. Crucifixion could take days sometimes. And the Romans wanted it to take a long time, and they wanted it to be painful, and they wanted it to be public, and they wanted everybody to see. And so they would leave people up there for days at a time sometimes. And you'd imagine how long it would take somebody to die being on that cross. But if you want to read about the crucifixion, Matthew 27, Mark 15, Luke 23, John 19. He does seven sayings from the cross from the third to the sixth hour. So that's 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. He says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. He says to the thief on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. So guess what? No baptism for that thief. No praying a prayer. He just believed that was the Christ, and he gets salvation. Hey, woman, behold thy son, tells Mary and John, that whole arrangement. The sixth to the ninth hour, look at what we got in the last 3 hours on the cross. He says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He says, I thirst. He also says, it is finished. And then he says, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Those are the seven sayings that we get from the cross. Notice the kind of the themes that go on both sides. It becomes more agonizing in the last 3 hours. Yeah.
So that could be very well a great basis in the Bible of that faith saves you.
Absolutely.
Because I mean,
like, you don't see anything else other than a profession of faith.
That's like almost giving his word, and if he doesn't keep his word, then he's a liar.
Yeah, you're going to be in heaven with me today. Yeah, I don't know how else you take that. Yeah, Lauren.
I don't know the Greek word for thirst, so that's what I'm asking. When he says I thirst, is that just humanity talking, or is it like the I yearn kind of thing?
Yeah, I think he's legitimately thirsty. I think he's dehydrated. He's, you know, and that's when they give him the vinegar and stuff. Yeah, it doesn't. Carry.
Think they like reuse the same crosses or?
They would. Yeah, same nails, same crosses. You didn't waste nails, so you take them out, you use them again. Yeah, absolutely.
Why did they give him vinegar?
It's almost kind of, well. They don't necessarily want to rehydrate him. You know, it's not. It's just kind of a okay. Here, take this. Ha ha ha. Yeah. Was there another hand back there? Did I see something? No? Okay. All right. Death of Jesus is Matthew 27. And when he dies, we get several things that happen. Just a second, Tito. Veil is torn. There's an earthquake. And then probably the craziest thing, Matthew 27, 52, and 53. Graves are opened. People that have been dead are walking around Jerusalem. Okay? Dead relatives are now walking around. Not like Walking Dead style. Okay? Like there are people and they recognized him. Like that's Uncle Jimmy. He died last year. Okay? And he's walking around the city. That's a pretty amazing thing that happens. Okay? It's kind of a precursor to the great resurrection. Okay? And look what happens when he dies. And I think this is important with the Romans being involved. Matthew 27, 54 says, now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, truly this was the Son of God. We've got Gentiles here recognizing, all right, this guy was special. This was not just anybody. Okay? His side is pierced in John 19. He's buried by sundown by Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. Nicodemus, where should we jump to for him in Scripture?
John
what?
Three.
Okay, and Joseph of Arimathea keeps popping back up. Okay, they bury him. He is, now, this is where I'll end. I know we're just about out of time. This is out of the ordinary. Because if he died as a seditionist, like some people want to tell us, if he died as a traitor to Rome, what would have been done with his body? They may not have even given him a burial. At best, a mass burial. At worst, they throw him on the trash heap and let the body bleach out in the sun. So people can see this is what happens to traitors. But Pilate gives the body to Joseph and Nicodemus. So what does that tell us? That Pilate didn't consider Jesus a traitor. He didn't consider Jesus a seditionist. There was something else going on here. Because they didn't treat seditionists like that. Seditionist was the worst thing you could be. And they wanted to make sure everybody knew that this is what happened to people that betray Rome. He gives them to Joseph and Nicodemus, and he's put in the tomb. Now, the other thing that happens here is that a guard is set up by Pilate. If you look at Matthew 27, the Jews come in and say, hey, he says he's going to rise from the dead. That's what these people are saying. So guard the tomb. And Pilate says, you know what? You got it. I'm going to send soldiers there, and we're going to seal it. So what's the story? Well, the authorities stole the body. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense because if they wanted to end Christianity, all they would have to do is produce the body. Well, his followers stole the body. How? They had Roman soldiers there and the tomb was sealed. So what's the best explanation? Oh, how about resurrection? Okay, that's exactly what we've got going on. Yeah. All right,
so I got two questions. On Palm Sunday, right, they're like, and then also giving him blood.
Yep.
How are those same Jews, what motivated them to just go like that, just snap?
I think they see their authority figures doing it. And I think if you've ever studied psychology before, you can learn about mob mentality.
Yeah.
Sometimes when other people start doing stuff, and you've done this before too, when you're with some friends and one of them's an idiot, okay, and he does something stupid, it's a lot easier for you to do something stupid too because other people are doing it. And we do that. We're mob mentality people.
Another idea is, remember, they expected him to come right now and be the king. So when he came into the town and instead wrecked the temple, he might have made some of the... And, I mean, that was probably pretty easy for the chief priest to sway the people. And I've seen it portrayed that they bribed people in the crowd.
Sure, that's a possibility
to shout things.
Yeah, and he probably doesn't look much like a king by the time they bring him out in front of everybody. And he doesn't look like a king anymore. All right, we could talk a little bit about the resurrection, but you know he makes 5 appearances after the resurrection. You can go look that stuff up. We're going to talk more about the crucifixion next week. So if you want to hear more about what that's all about, what he went through and all that, we'll talk a little bit about that. All right, let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for today. Thank you for this time. Thank you for your Son. Thank you for this gospel that we see him live out here during this Passion Week. Help us to take it seriously, to be literate about these occurrences, to know why we believe what we believe and who Jesus is and what he did for us. And Lord, as we get closer to the Easter season, help us to know why we celebrate it and help us to love you more and worship you better. Bless us and keep us as we go, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thank you, guys.
Junior High!